Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the NIIT Limited Q4 and FY17 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Vijay Thadani, Managing Director and Vice Chairman of NIIT Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and welcome everyone to the investor call for discussion of our quarter four results and the full year FY17 results of NIIT Limited. I have the whole leadership team here with me, including the Chairman, Mr. Pawar, the Joint Managing Director, Mr. Rajendran, the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Rahul Patwardhan, the Chief Executive Officer Designate, Mr. Sapnesh Lalla, Mr. Prakash Menon, who is the Head of Global Retail Business, and many other colleagues. So we will be very happy to answer your questions after Rahul Patwardhan gives the initial briefing on the results, and then we look forward to an interesting Q&A session. Over to you, Rahul.
Yeah, thank you, Vijay. I'd like to start by saying that the quarter four has been another quarter of working through the plans that we laid out 2.5 years ago and refined for FY17. After what had been a difficult quarter in quarter three, thanks to the external demonetization impact on our SNC business, we have worked extremely hard as a team and executed on everything that we had planned, and the results are being where we wanted them to be. During quarter four, but all through FY17, we have been reinvesting in the renewal and the growth phase of our three-phase transformation strategy, and the emphasis has been on digital transformation of NIIT as well as supporting the digital transformation of our clients. I'm quite pleased with the results that we have been able to achieve for this quarter. It's been a strong operational performance for Q4, and therefore partly making up for some of the shortfalls that we had in Q3. And this is in spite of the significant turbulence that we have faced during the year, thanks to two main factors: demonetization as well as the volatility in the foreign exchange rates. So some key numbers, I will take you through that. And unlike previous sessions, instead of asking each of my team members to talk a little bit on their area, we will directly go into questions to allow you ask many more questions. For quarter four, our revenue grew 51% YOY to 361.5 crores. This obviously is a very high growth rate, and I do want to emphasize that this is due to abnormally or significantly high strategic sourcing revenues that we got in this quarter, thanks to the requests of one or two of our very important clients. Our EBITDA grew 30% YOY for the quarter to reach 17.2 crores. The PAT grew 71% YOY to reach 30.2 crores. Excellent cash management during this quarter brought our net debt down from 103.8 crores at the end of the last quarter down to 41.9 crores at the end of this quarter. And obviously, that also was contributed by a substantial reduction in the DSO days from 98 days to 79 days over the last 3 months. For the full year, our revenue grew 18% YOY to reach 1187.7 crores. Our go-forward revenue, this is excluding the businesses like government contracts, government schools contracts, and a couple of other businesses which we had told you that we are not selling anymore. So the businesses that we are actively involved in has actually grown 23% YOY for the full year. Our EBITDA grew 7% YOY to reach 76 crores, and our PAT was 65.1 crores. So going to the businesses, the corporate learning business, the revenue grew 35% for the full year. Quarter results you already have. The MTS share of revenues also for the full year was improved to 95% of the total revenues. This is a very good quarter in terms of customer addition. We completed the contracting with two new MTS clients. One was the very large RECO or Real Estate Council of Ontario, which you had seen as a press release about a month back. And the second one is a very large global company in the aviation sector, who I can't name. But in addition, we renewed two existing contracts, also very important customers, and therefore demonstrating satisfaction with the services that we are rendering and a desire to continue to work with us for the long term. But what's also important is that we had confirmations for three more very important orders with three very major clients who are also leaders in their respective industries. The contracting right now is going on, but we had got confirmations that they want to work with us, and we've actually started working on them, and transitional efforts already began for both the customers that we did contracting as well as these three customers. Our quarter four visibility grew 24%, quarter four order intake grew 43%, and the Real Estate Council contract I talked about is probably our largest contract ever, definitely if not the largest, among the largest top two or three since we started our MTS business. For the skills and career business, as we said at the end of quarter three, we are confident of coming back to growth and profit in quarter four, and we have. Our growth was 3% for the quarter, and the go-forward growth, if you exclude businesses like some of our international businesses that we had said we were not continuing, was actually 7%. Our EBITDA improved to 4%, so 3% growth, 4% EBITDA for the quarter. And on a full-year basis, 74% growth of the EBITDA from last year to this year. Our DigiNex portfolio, which is the main plank of our retail business in India, actually exceeded all our internal goals for the year, putting us in a very good position going into the new year, where, as you can see, there is an immense opportunity both for reskilling people in digital skills in the industry as well as to equip young engineers with the digital skills so that they can enter the only hotspot in the IT industry, which is where digital skills are required. We also signed some major deals in China and very recently with the Yinchuan city government in the Ningxia province in the north of China. And also we tied up with a major partner in Bangladesh to bring NIT IT training into Bangladesh. Training.com and NIT TV also had substantial traction, and we can share the stats if there are specific questions on that. The schools business, while it may have been our smallest business, has actually done extremely well, and this was our most important quarter for the year. We completed the Maharashtra project, as you remember, government schools project, as you remember, in quarter two, and therefore the overall revenue has gone down vis-a-vis last year for obvious reasons. But when you look at the go-forward private schools business, excluding the asset-based business in private schools, which we've exited, we've actually grown 49% year-on-year on revenue for the go-forward private schools non-asset business. And for the full year, we've grown 29%. So very strong performance by the private schools business. And that is exhibited by the fact that we added 392 new private school clients in quarter four, which is an increase in 221% over the number of schools we added the same quarter last year. And this is the most important quarter where we add the largest number of schools. One statistic is this is the highest ever number of schools that we have added in one quarter in the history of this business. Okay. Our EBITDA for the schools business improved at 89% YOY, and the full year it improved by 143% YOY. So overall, I think the team is pleased, and I am very pleased with the results that we've been able to achieve in this quarter. It demonstrates that we have a solid team, we have a solid strategy, we have a very well-defined set of plans, and we are executing well to our plans. Yes, there can be a bump here and there to external factors, but we are making up for that and continuing on the trajectory of growth and transformation that we had set for ourselves over 2.5 years back. With that, I'm going to stop at this stage and open the floor to Vijay. Would you like to make any comments?
I think we should open the floor for questions. So, operator.
Yes.
Okay, while you're opening it for questions, maybe I will ask Sapnesh, the CEO designate, who will take over from end of July, so to talk a little bit about the results as well as the way forward.
Thanks, Vijay, and thanks, Pat. I'm not going to repeat what Pat said about the results other than the fact that the team performed remarkably well. It bodes well for us as we get into our new year to have three new very substantial contracts in the offing, and hopefully more as we get closer to the end of the quarter. Also, the SNC business getting to growth, getting to positive EBITDA is a good sign and bodes well for the coming year. Schools business, as Pat pointed out, especially the go-forward business, is doing remarkably well. So overall, bodes well for the next year. And I'm excited and confident that we will continue this growth trajectory as we get into the growth phase for the company. Thanks, Vijay.
Okay, so can we open it up for Q&A?
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to only use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Manik Taneja from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations for very good execution in the current quarter. So just wanted to get your thoughts as to how are you seeing things evolve with regards to the DigiNext course curriculum, the response from the response on the ground. That's question number one. The second question that I had was on the schools business, which as such is a smaller part of your portfolio, but given the transition or the transformation that you are doing over there, one has seen significant improvement on the profitability front over there. So how should we be thinking about this part of the business going forward? Thank you.
Yeah. The DigiNext curriculum is done well, as I mentioned. We have exceeded our internal budgets for enrollments for FY17. As you know, we launched only in quarter two, so we didn't even have a full year.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, as you can see from the noise in the industry as a whole, it's now reached a crescendo of concern of the need on a very urgent basis to address the acute shortage of digital skills in an environment where there actually may be an oversupply of IT professionals, but there's an acute shortage of digital skills professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And we are seeing that not just in terms of the interactions we're having with companies who want to reskill their people, and our mm-hmm. StackRoot program and our B2B corporate business in India is seeing the benefit of that. But on the retail side, we are seeing both the universities and colleges who are not equipped in the short run definitely to address the need to reskill their students in these new skills if they want to make sure they get jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So we are actually having a lot of traction from colleges asking us to help them address the need to introduce digital curriculum into their formal bachelor's degree curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of traction over there. We've already won a number of contracts in this space, and there's a very large pipeline of colleges who are talking to us. And I personally have been going around the country meeting a number of them. And I can see the urgency is very high.
Mm-hmm.
We're also seeing that in terms of the demand from the young engineering students who also realize that it is absolutely critical for them to equip themselves in digital skills if they are to secure jobs in the IT industry,
mm-hmm.
because jobs with vanilla skills don't exist,
mm-hmm.
are definitely going to be far fewer than mm-hmm. they have been before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have done the right thing in launching DigiNext and piloting it and getting all our pieces in place in the year just before this big push is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So this year is really going to be an important one.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, the banking sector also we see a demand increase because we're expanding our presence into a number more banks and also into different product sets in the banks. From just the branch officer training and the sales officer training in the private sector banks, we've entered during the last year into the public sector probationary officer training space, which is actually a higher ticket sale. And we're also getting into a lot more of the training or reskilling of bankers, which is also a very major initiative, as you may be aware, under the new RBI initiative. So good potential in both these spaces. Overall, on SNC, if you're asking for a guidance, we have looked at an improvement in our growth rate and improvement in our EBITDA. For the coming year, we will remain in single digit in both these, but coming from where we are, that will be a definite positive improvement for the coming year over where we were for FY17.
Mm-hmm.
The schools business, the team has done well to create a very, very well-formed operation. There's a very strong sales management ethic and a very strong operational delivery ethic in place, and that has translated both to the sales productivity improvement as well as the operational productivity and EBITDA improvement that you see in the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
We are confident that we will see a continued trajectory of growth of around 15% on the top line for the go-forward schools business,
mm-hmm.
And an EBITDA which will still remain single digit but getting closer to double digit by the end of the year from the 5% that we've closed this year.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, we are working on the B2C side of the schools business, as we had mentioned before. We have done a complete proof of concept testing with students from a number of schools. We've had interesting results, which gives us confidence that the path we're going down is the right path. And we're engaged in discussions for raising funds, which is right now as much as I can say about that topic.
Okay, okay. Thank you. So should one think, so historically over the last 3-4 years, it's been corporate learning which has driven the overall performance. Would it be fair to assume that with all the interventions that you've done, both on the skills and career side as well as the schools business, one should look for these segments also to be growth drivers for us going forward?
Yes. On the top line, the growth drivers of SNC will not be at the same 15% as I just shared, but because it is about 30% of the business, therefore, when it starts growing, it obviously contributes to the overall growth. On the EBITDA side, already in FY17 itself, both these businesses have contributed substantially to the improvement in EBITDA because they were SNC was a loss-making business or a break-even business last year, and it has improved its EBITDA by a substantial amount, and so did the schools business.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the coming year, the impact of these two businesses may be seen more on the EBITDA side, a little less on the revenue top-line side. But that's a good thing because we'll improve the overall EBITDA of the company.
Sure. Thank you and all the best for the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is the next question from the line of Kaushik Poddar from KB Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Your debt level has come down, your margin has improved. Why haven't you declared any dividend? Hello?
Yeah. Vijay, would you like to take that?
I think we would still like to see some growth capital. In addition to whatever you said, our liquidity has also improved. Our net debt has come down. But I think we are still in the growth phase and we would need growth capital, and that's the reason we haven't declared dividend this time.
You require growth capital in which all places?
I think all three businesses, for example, the corporate learning group, would require working capital as we are gearing up, and you heard about the large contract that we just got, the RICO contract, correct? And that in the first, till July of 19, we have to be spending money on that transition because it's a long transition, and the revenue will only start coming from there, so there is a working capital investment there. The schools and the online business, both of those, as well as the DigiNext curriculum, you would have seen the new campaign that we have on the digital transformation technology. So, that is the second set of numbers required in both those businesses.
And third, of course, we have to be ready for any M&A opportunity. So we would, the board discussed this over a period of time, and I think we would at this time like to give it a pass.
See, have you set any policy for the when to declare dividend? I mean, your debt coming down, even in the, even after that also we don't get any dividend. I mean, there is something. I mean, at least we should be knowing when at least we should be getting some dividend. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So, first of all, the dividend is an indication. The dividend comes from the standalone, the India profit.
Okay.
And as you know, at this time, the standalone has not been doing well.
Okay.
Correct? And that puts a strain on the overall ability of the company to be able to give, and that was to relate it to the India business. And as we are recovering from that, and as we come out of that during the year, I think in future we should be looking forward to dividends.
Okay. Thank you.
We have the next question from the line of Debashish Mazumdar from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on the very good set of numbers. My question pertains to the corporate learning business, especially the strategic sourcing part of the business. Wanted to understand what is this exactly linked to, this strategic sourcing revenue. And second is we are seeing significant degrowth in margins, EBITDA margins specifically. And if I exclude some of the transition cost you are talking about, without that, the EBITDA margin is 11%. So just wanted to understand, is the transition cost is related to that strategic revenue we are talking about? Then in that case, we have booked around 3 crore kind of loss in that business. This is one. Second is, again, on the corporate learning business, for the full year of FY17, we have almost reported a constant currency growth of around 17-18%. Wanted to check what would be the future growth trajectory with considering the incremental visibility you have right now.
Yeah, I'll ask Sapnesh to answer these questions.
Sure. You asked a bunch of questions, so if I miss one, do remind me.
Sure.
I think your first question was about what the strategic sourcing business is and how does that impact profitability. As you know, we work as an outsourcer for learning and development organizations in large companies. And one of the things that learning and development organizations do on a one-off basis is to buy third-party training materials such that the employees can get trained on generic training such as, you know, IT training or things like that. Several of our customers or some of our customers engage us in doing that activity on a value add basis, and that activity is called strategic sourcing in the industry. This activity carries or requires us to recognize what we buy for our customers as our revenue, and this revenue does not come with a margin. That is just how the accounting principles use revenue recognition. That said, this past quarter, we ended up having to do a substantially higher amount of strategic sourcing, as Pat pointed out, for a couple of our customers, which resulted into higher than normal growth in revenue without corresponding margins. I now forgot the second question that you asked. Can you repeat your second question?
So the question pertains to the EBITDA margin on a standalone basis without considering the strategic sourcing revenue going forward. So what is your going forward EBITDA margin numbers for the corporate learning business? Would it be same around 11-12%?
So there are a couple of factors that affect this. One is, as you may have guessed, improvement in performance. So on a go forward basis, we would like to improve our performance. I think the second dimension of that same question is, as you are probably aware, we are moving to an Ind-AS standard in accounting, and that results into a different treatment of strategic sourcing as part of revenue recognition. As you are aware, Indas expects you to work with substance over form, and therefore we will, on a go-forward basis, not recognize strategic sourcing revenues as part of declared revenues. So from an overall perspective, you can see an upswing in our margins because of non-recognition of strategic sourcing revenues, as well as some upswing in our margins because of improved performance.
So would it be the EBITDA margin for CLG business would seem around 11-12% as far as your guidance are concerned, or we are seeing?
Oh, I think you can expect more, by about 200-300 basis points.
Okay, just because of the change in accounting system or because of changing the overall business strategy?
Both.
Okay. Both. And my last question related to the corporate learning business again. On a constant currency basis, on FY17, we have seen a growth of around 17-18%. What is the kind of growth trajectory, considering the new kind of deals that you have, incremental visibility and incremental addition of clients at the MTS level? What is the kind of guidance you are giving for the corporate learning business going forward?
So I'll prefix the guidance with some amount of volatility that we are starting to see. From a corporate learning business point of view, there is significant Forex volatility. From the point of view of other businesses at NIT, there is volatility with respect to the turbulence that you see in IT, as well as the implementation of GST. Notwithstanding that, like last year, we had provided a guidance of 15% growth, but actually ended up doing a little bit better from a constant currency point of view. I do think we've had a good start to the year based on the contracts that we have achieved. Some of these contracts are in transition, but will start delivering value. We also expect to keep adding customers to the 34 customers that we have. So I feel that our growth trajectory should continue at the current levels of 15% on a go-forward basis. Again, on a constant currency basis, which means after discounting any changes or adverse changes because of currency fluctuations.
Thank you very much for answering my question.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Ganesh Shetty as an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir, for the good number, good set of numbers. So my question is regarding SNC business, whereas we have our foot in Bangladesh, Vietnam, and as well as China. So we are expanding very fast in international territory, and that too in digitex type of business. Can we expect more margin from this type of international business, sir?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, our international SNC business already today gives us better margins than the domestic business, as you're aware. Parts of domestic business have been in loss in the past, and we have worked over the last couple of years to bring that down and move it into positive territory. So I think it is. I want to emphasize that we do not have a strategy that we are focusing on international and not on India. We are working on both at the same time. China and certain selected emerging markets are our focus. We are not going indiscriminately into many, many countries. We're just picking large markets and focusing on them. So Bangladesh obviously is one of the largest populated countries in the world, which is why we are there. Otherwise, we wouldn't be going there. The India business, however, is also on the verge of starting to generate profits, not at the level that we used to have before, but it's back into the profit zone. Parts of it, and this year I expect that we will be seeing profit from the entire India business. Prakash, you'd like to add a few comments on the outlook for the India business as well as the international.
Hi, thank you for the question. There are two things. One is both in international and India, we are trying to balance two kinds of business that we do. One is a business that is a center business where we have an education center and people come there. And the other is where we embed our curriculum into the university or big colleges in all parts of the world, which is just about begun in India. And balancing that, in my view, will help us get over the problem in India in terms of getting better than just break even. This is a strategy that we followed in China for 10 years and we continue. So outlook is to say that we will want to grow this year, but as Pat initially said, we are looking at single-digit growth and we are looking at single-digit EBITDA. Thank you, Pat.
So my second question is regarding India business of SNC. So our institutional business, which we have been doing for quite a long time, and now with the improved version of DigiNext curriculum in it, can we demand more margin-based business from the customers which we already have? Can you please throw some light on this?
Yeah. When you saying institution, do you mean corporate?
Yes,
business?
Sir. Institutions which are like banks and other customers. Like banks are coming to us for, getting trained, which is actually, SNC business type of business, what we are doing. So I want to have just, more knowledge on that.
Yeah. So the first point I would make is that our institutional business, which we call the B2B business in India, which is part of SNC, is being one of the high growth businesses in FY17, and we expect it to continue to be a high growth business in FY18. We are getting a lot of traction from three sectors. Sector one is the whole IT, ITS sector, thanks to the digital transformation process and reskilling that is going on in these sectors. Second is the banking sector, where, as I mentioned before, there is a lot of traction in private sector, but now also in the public sector. And the third piece is the retail and distribution channel business, where we work with companies like Vodafone, Jioni, Reliance Petroleum, various organizations who manage very large sales-oriented channels across the country. And we have started getting a number of deals to train very large numbers of their retail sales force across the country. So these are the three main growth drivers. Our contracts are moving from what used to be predominantly mandate training rate contracts into a bit more strategic contracts where we are being asked to deliver performance improvement outcomes. And because of that, we are able to increase and should be able to increase the margins going forward. And that is the strategy that we're working on in this business. Having said that, keep in mind that this is a domestic-to-domestic business, and therefore there is no cost arbitrage available. And therefore, we cannot drive the kind of margins that we could drive in, from India to US or India to Europe.
That's all from me, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Sameer Cheda from Vama International. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations on a good set of numbers.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would just like to have more clarity on this Canada Rico deal. So I have read somewhere that it is around 750 crore deal. So do we take it as 150 annually or how do we?
Yeah, I'll ask Sapnesh to answer that since he has personally been involved in on the negotiation and closing of this deal.
Sure.
For the most detailed description of this deal, I would direct you to our website where we have a detailed press release regarding this deal. But in nutshell, what I can say is, A, it is a large deal. B, it is an exclusive mandate to NIIT, which is part of a two-member consortium built up of Humber College, which is a large career college in the state of Ontario, as well as NIIT. The incumbent did approximately $100 million Canadian in the past 5 years. And in the last year, the incumbent did approximately $30 million Canadian. That's the extent of detail that I can go to from a financial perspective. But you might be able to find a few more snippets that might be of interest in the press release.
Correct. And do we expect the same EBITDA levels as of what we are enjoying in this same deal?
We publicly don't comment on EBITDA levels for an opportunity or a contract, but we expect to do as well, if not better, on an overall basis going forward.
All right. And do we see more such deals?
One other thing I would point out, as Pat noted, or Vijay noted earlier in his comments when he was talking about dividends, the transition for this opportunity is a two-year transition. It is a longer than typical transition, given the size of the opportunity. So we will start seeing revenue and profit from this deal from mid-2019 onwards.
Okay, mid-FY19, you're saying?
FY19-20. FY20.
And do you see similar opportunities in Canada itself or any other country, similar size deals happening?
Indeed, they are not the only regulatory organization in Canada. There are many such regulatory organizations that regulate skills in Canada. And Canada, again, is not unique. These regulatory bodies are present not only in Canada, but United States and other parts of Western Europe.
All right. That's good. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may please press star and one. We have the next question from the line of Shraddha Agarwal from Asian Market Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congrats on a good quarter. Just wanted to check, in the normal course of business, how much does strategic sourcing revenue contribute to CLG revenue?
It's not the same number each quarter, but at times, or at, in some quarters, it goes as high as 20%. At times, it is lower than that, but that's approximately how high it is. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, as we switch to the Ind AS accounting treatment on a go-forward basis from Q1, strategic sourcing revenue will not be accounted as revenue in our books.
So how else will the accounting be done? I mean, where will you count this revenue now?
It is not going to be counted as revenue in any of our books. It might still show up in the unaudited accounts as system-wide revenue, but it will not be part of audited accounts.
So even after excluding almost like 20% contribution to top line, we are talking of a 15% constant currency growth in CLG. Is that understanding right?
On a like-to-like basis, yes.
On a like-to-like basis. Okay. And on margins, you've mentioned that this time around you had some transition cost on 5 contracts which impacted margins for the quarter. So could you throw some more light on those 5 contracts? One, I guess, was this strategic sourcing deal, and the other 4 contracts which impacted margins?
So just for the record, one of the deals was not the strategic sourcing deal. It was the RICO contract that we talked about, which resulted into higher transition costs. There are 4 other deals, of which one is a contract and 3 others are confirmation of contracts. The contract is with a large aviation company, as Pat pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 others are, again, leaders in their specific industries. As you're probably aware, we don't name our contracts publicly, but what I can share is each of them is a leader in their category.
So on a normalized basis, margins should get back to their normal levels of 11-12% next quarter onwards.
And that's right, on an IGAP basis, but as you look at in that treatment, they would be proportionally higher.
True. Secondly, on the digital business, I mean, it seems that you had recognized some revenue on that part of business. So would you like to comment on how's the traction shaping up in that business?
Online. But it's digital, you meant our online.
Online training business, yeah.
It's training.com.
Right.
Training.com, we started somewhere in the beginning around October of last year, launching programs. And we have focused this platform a little differently from most of the other online players.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we have seen through our experience with NIIT.com, which was a free portal, that the market has got a lot of offerings which are free or very low price or very high discounted. So we wanted to create a space of our own. Mm-hmm. So we are focusing on management curriculum as our prime focus in the short term. Very high-end courses, high-priced courses. The typical course from IIM Calcutta that we offer can range from 1 lakh to 4 lakhs.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the cost of acquisition, even if it is high, as a proportion of the revenue, will be relatively small. And therefore, our possibility of bringing this business to a profit business quickly will be much higher. Okay. So that has been our main strategic plank. And therefore, most of the marketing and most of the products that we have on training.com right now fall into this category. We do have some IT courses, but we are not emphasizing them in terms of our spend on marketing. We have generated an order book. I don't have the exact numbers offhand right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, we had reported at the end of Q3 that we had an order book generated through applicants and registrants for these management courses, which was to the tune of, the visibility right now is about 5 crores, and quarter one is when we have a number of these management courses actually starting off. So I think our most expensive course starts at the end of quarter one. So a lot of registrations will probably happen in quarter one for that program. So we're not trying to drive this as a mass, low-cost volume online portal. You have to see it more as a high-priced, high-end portal where people are willing to pay a high price because they want the outcome that the program offers.
Very different from the other one. So, Pat, I mean, EBITDA loss in this business has only been increasing for the last 5 quarters. Now, I think we burnt cash to the tune of 29 million rupees in this quarter. So, by when do you think our operations would stabilize and we could, I mean, if not aiming at profitability, when can we have visibility on not burning cash at least in this business?
Yeah, so that is one of the reasons why our strategy has, it's actually evolved, I'll be honest, over the last 9 months from originally targeting IT training a bit more. We decided to move much more towards management training so that we could bring this business to profit quicker. In the coming year, we expect still to make some losses on this business, but they will be lower than the losses we have achieved in FY17. The internal targets, of course, are to see whether we can somehow bring this business to break even within FY18, but that's not something that we can currently see.
Right, that's helpful. And on the school business, what portion of government contract is still pending to be executed?
Yeah, we have 2 states left. We have the Assam government and we have Chhattisgarh.
Mm-hmm.
Assam has 2 phases. The phase 1 gets over in this calendar year. I think it gets over in quarter 3.
Mm-hmm.
And the second phase gets over in the quarter 4. So both these, Assam gets over completely in FY18.
Mm.
Chhattisgarh takes 1 more year. So by FY20, we will not have any government schools business left.
Sure, that's helpful. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants who wish to ask a question, may please press star and 1.
Hello?
Yes, sir. The next question from the line of Mangesh Kulkarni from Almonds Global Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Sir, I just wanted to know about our outlook on the receivable positions, which has remained almost same for the full year at around 256 crores. So what is the outlook? How much is more than 6 months old and all these things?
Yeah, as I pointed out, our DSO days have reduced from 98 days to 79 days.
Right.
And our bill receivable has actually reduced from the end of quarter 3 to quarter 2.
Okay.
So we have made, quarter 3 to quarter 4. What I do want to highlight is that when we last met last quarter or the quarter before that, our outstanding receivables from government schools was about 90 crores. It is now down to 50 crores. So we have made substantial progress on the government receivables also. Even if you look at our aging receivables, of greater than 180 days, they've also come down from 39 days to 33 days.
Okay.
So overall, we have done very well on receivables. There are a couple of pockets which we are focused on now. One is the government schools receivables, which we still have 50 crores, but there is good movement. Chhattisgarh as a state is paying on time. So the only area left, so some part of this 50 crores is Chhattisgarh recent bills, only raised about 2-3 months ago in February. And the rest is Assam, and there are a couple of old bills pertaining to Telangana and Andhra Pradesh. And in every case, money is coming in. So this year could be the year where we would be able to clean up a vast majority of the government schools receivables, and that's what we are working on very closely.
Okay, and will it result in overall debt reduction, which is at around 151 crores, our long-term debt?
Yes, it will. At the current point of time, we are actually not even using any cash credit lines. Our entire debt is in the form of the long-term debt that we have. Our first payment on our Citibank long-term debt happens by the end of September, about 20 crores. And unless we go in for an inorganic transaction, or any activity of that kind which requires substantial investment, we do not see a need to go back to taking long-term loans. So that is subject to those decisions that we might take in the future. So overall, our net debt position, which also, as you know, is extremely low compared to what it has been for many quarters.
Right.
By the end of the year, if our business works to the plans that we have, we could see some reduction in net debt also by the end of the year, though seasonality-wise, it may move up and down during the year.
Okay, and what will be our CapEx requirement for the Canada district?
Yeah, that is a good question. The whole idea of getting into a consortium deal with Humber College is to avoid having to make any physical asset investment of any kind. So we are the prime contractor. I want you to note that. The contract is given to us, and we have got Humber as a consortium partner into the deal.
Okay.
Their role is to handle physical delivery of the training in many, many towns and cities of Ontario for the part of the program that is delivered physically.
Okay.
But the program is also delivered online, and the content development of all the content for the program, whether it's online or through the physical centers, is our responsibility. So we build the IP for RICO,
okay,
and we deliver it directly online, and we get it delivered physically through Humber. So all physical assets are Humber's responsibility. All content development is being done by us.
Okay. And in with this RERA coming in India, do you think this kind of opportunity is going to come in near future in India also for us?
It's a good thought. The idea of certification of financial analysts, certification of insurance people, certification of real estate people, this is the kind of utility model that we are looking at actively. We are obviously focused a lot more on this kind of business in markets which can give us much better rates.
Right.
But if that does happen in India, we definitely would look at it given the credentials that we would have, having worked for one of the leading real estate markets of the world. And keep in mind, Ontario is one of the hottest real estate markets in the world. Toronto prices are going up, up and up. Therefore, everybody wants to become a real estate agent in that city.
Right. And in terms of our this India's next tech star, can you throw some more highlights to which are the colleges with whom already we have tied up or going to be tied up, or universities where we are looking such tie-ups?
Yeah, I'll ask Prakash to talk about it. TechStar is actually got nothing to do with a college tie-up. It's a program to attract youth towards participating in IP creation. But let me ask Prakash to talk a little bit more about TechStar, but also about our college NIC program.
Thank you, Pat. So the objective of a TechStar is to, one, attract students who are in the third and fourth year of engineering, people who are going to graduate very soon, that are facing a problem with placement on one hand, because they know the traditional Java, .NET kind of stuff, when our companies need technologies in the digital transformation area. So one is to attract them. The other is to say, how do you attract their brighter minds? And therefore, the TechStar as a concept. Now, The student joins a course and he can pick up any project of his choice from a choice of, which will be given to him about 10 projects. And while he does the course, he also does this project.
Mm-hmm.
And the project is real life stuff. So it's like, for example, building a store on the net. It's to build the Ola platform, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And you have mentors who help them do that while they're doing the program at NIT.
Okay.
And we will have people from the industry who judge these applications that they develop and create stars out of them. So there are prices and things like that, but that's not the important part. The important part is each one of the students would be able to demonstrate to a potential employer his capabilities. And when you have this whole thing about the next tech star, it adds to the fund quotient to this whole thing. And that's what it's all about. But essentially what we're trying to address is educating students in large numbers about the importance of them knowing the newer technologies.
Okay.
So when we talk to college presidents this year, they seem to understand such a need. When we spoke to college presidents last year, they were not clued in onto this as yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the student still is not clued in. The student still says, my senior did Java, so let me do Java, which is not good enough anymore. And therefore, this whole TechStar story is to educate. And as a leader, as a pioneer in the market, I think it's our duty to educate people. And this is part of that. With the NIT Inside, is a very different thing. It's got nothing to do with the TechStar. But we've signed up with four universities right now. We have the UNIT College in Dimapur. We have HIMT in Greater Noida. We tied up with a few more at this point in time. And we're looking at tying up with about 15 more universities, with some names that I gave you. It's a very different thing because colleges and universities are now looking at the fact that we have content which is more relevant than what they have at this point in time. And therefore, there is a need there. They want to associate with us, where we would embed our curriculum into the college curriculum. There are multiple models that are coming through, but that's a very exciting new area for us in India.
Okay. And so this TechStar is only for the computer engineering related courses that we are looking currently, not for the other mechanical or other kind of engineering?
Well, not really. I would say that anybody who aspires to be a TechStar, very much like anybody who aspires to be the Indian Idol and be the greatest musician and singer in the world tomorrow, we are open to attracting them. So if you are an engineering graduate or a STEM graduate, which means science, technology, engineering, or mathematics, and obviously you have to have computer programming capability of some kind, otherwise you are not going to be able to participate in this program. Like an Indian Idol participant won't pass the first round if they can't sing basic tunes. But this is much more than just training people. On the one side, we're trying to educate the youth at large that it is really important to become digitally skilled if you want to have a job and be relevant in the workplace of tomorrow. So that's a broader message. The other end of the spectrum is to say this whole IT sector is going to move away from you being a programmer in a large company, a nameless employee number, into you being small groups of companies, doing startup businesses, ideating, innovating, building IP, and we want the brightest minds in India to gravitate towards that and see this as a way to monetize their personal skills, very much like an Indian Idol and similar other programs, where every one of the winners of these programs have ended up becoming famous singers a few years down the line.
Right. And, sir, my last question is on this unlocking value in our NIT technologies. So any timeline we are looking for that?
There is no timeline defined. We see it as an investment, so far a good investment, which has given us good returns. We have stated it before that a good investment can always be monetized for the right price and for the right buyer. But beyond that, there is no specific timeline or agenda that has been defined.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Ronak Shah from SJC Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So you mentioned you're being fairly aggressive in terms of approaching colleges in India in terms of offering the digital courses for students. My question is, do you think this has a risk of cannibalizing your retail, franchisee, and IT business at all?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think we have thought about this very carefully, and we believe this is only enlarging the market, and let me give you the logic for that. When we had our GNIT programs, when we used to have a few 100,000 students doing these programs, they used to be doing their college degree, and in parallel, they did the GNIT because it was designed to be going alongside the college a few hours a week. What we are finding today, and not just today, but over the last few years, college schedules have become quite busy, much more than they used to be in the previous years, number one. Number two, the transport times that most people face in cities and towns of India today, if they have to come for a two-hour program to an NIT center, they travel 1 hour, sometimes 2 hours, and the other way around again, 1 hour, 1 to 2 hours. So what we are doing by having physical centers is catering to a small segment of the market of people who have passed out from a bachelor's degree and looking for a job, and then they want to skill themselves to get the job. But the much larger segment are all the people who are sitting inside the colleges, and today we have a great opportunity that the vast majority of engineering colleges are not equipped to deliver digital skills to their students, which is why they're approaching us, and we are seeing a very large number of prospects around the country. In fact, we have to be careful to focus our attention on the ones that we can convert quickly, because we may swamp ourselves with too many discussions going on in parallel. But there are some constraints in this market. As you know, colleges have fixed prices on what they can charge students. If they were to partner with us, they have to add a cost structure to their existing cost base. And therefore, we have to come up with interesting customized models for each college to be able to insert NIT curriculum into their existing curriculum without breaking the constraints of their price point and breaking the constraints of the curriculum that has been defined by the university. So it's going to be a customized approach, college by college.
Got it. So just to throw a little bit more on the pricing, as you mentioned, so is this kind of a per-student revenue model, or is it bundled along with the students' tuition fees already? So the college kind of bears the additional cost of bringing NIT in?
Yeah, that's why I said customized. There are many different models. There are some colleges who are bundling in our services into what they already price to the student. The student doesn't pay price at all. The college is picking up the price, and we are getting paid by the college. There's a second model where the college allows us into the college, provides us the infrastructure and all the facilities. So we all just have to bring our curriculum and our faculty and an online portal. And we cater to a segment of the students who are encouraged to take on additional courses that the college is unable to offer. So it becomes a little bit like doing retail marketing within a limited student subset of a college. There's a third model where colleges have freedom to offer certificate and diploma programs post their bachelor's degree, which is not constrained by price governed by the university, and that is a much more open model. So every college is talking to us about what makes sense to them. So we see four or five distinct models. We are being flexible right now because it's early days, but I expect that once we've gone through one season, it'll become clear that there are four or five models that are the most appropriate, and then we'll have a standard set of offers which we can replicate in larger numbers.
Okay, and the student body knows that it is NIT providing the training, right?
That will be obvious because part of the curriculum will be delivered through an online portal, which we would have, we may even brand it along with the college, but there will be NIT's name associated it. In some of these programs, for example, the certificate and the diploma program, the college actually wants us to co-deliver the certificate to give it credibility. So it really depends on the program and the college.
Okay, because then that leaves you free to kind of mine the students for additional courses outside of the college as well, right?
Yes, of course, a side benefit would be that many colleges, we may find students who decide that it is more convenient for them to come to our center or to go to our online retail portal by themselves. But our college targeting is to try to get deals with the colleges so that with a single sale, we get a large number of students. So, for example, with one college in the south of India, we have 800 students tied up and we have a stream of revenue from 800 students.
Got it. That's really useful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would like to hand the conference over to the management for the closing remarks. Thank you, and over to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I think we had a very interesting interaction right now, and as usual, we learned a lot from this. Your questions have been incisive and give us a lot of indications of what you're looking for and also help us refine our strategy. I want to thank each one of you for supporting us, guiding us, and your questions. We are available for any follow-up questions or discussions as you would consider fit. Kapil Saurabh is a person leading investor relations. The leadership team will be in Mumbai tomorrow and day after, and would be meeting many of you individually in case you would like to meet up or talk, then best would be to reach out to Kapil Saurabh and we'll schedule a meeting. So thank you very much for being here and wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, members of management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of NIIT Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.